All righty, welcome back to the Tank Me Later podcast. I'm your host, Noah Rubin. This is episode 67. And today, Hudson, better known as NBA Dynasty Prospects on Twitter, is going to be joining me to kick off this series where we go through each position and look at some different dynasty values. And today we are starting with point guards. So let's go ahead and get into it. Right. Normally when you hear me or watch me doing podcasts, it's afternoon, it's night. Sometimes it's super late night for me, but today we're making time zones work. It is 6 a.m. bright and early for me. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Hudson. I believe it is 8 p.m. for him. So hopefully if I just start rambling or just start losing my train of thought, then we're probably going to ditch the whole early morning podcast idea for me, but we're going to give it a go. Hudson, first time guest. How are you doing today?
Doing really well, Noah. Thanks for having me and appreciate you getting up super early for me, facilitating that. If it was Kingy or someone in your network, it'd be much easier as a fellow Aussie. But yeah, no, you had to do the hard yards. So appreciate that, mate. Super happy to be here.
Yeah, of course. It's a lot of, getting up to just talk about basketball, specifically dynasty fantasy basketball, it's not an issue. Getting up to go do something not fun, that's, I got to get up at 6 a.m. But this is I'm just going to start off my day talking hoops. So we're all good here. We're not complaining. We're excited to get the day started the right way.
We're going to do that. And I think some of our opinions are so alike that we're going to have a nice cruisy chat to start your day. Maybe a few little contentious points if we're lucky, but I think we're going to be on the same wavelength. So let's get into it.
Let's do it. So for this series, we're just going to go through dynasty by position. For this one, it's point guards. And we have four kind of categories of how we're going to divide them up. We're obviously not going to talk about every point guard. We don't have time for that. But we're going to talk about starting with the best of the best. So this is kind of the top dynasty point guards. We don't have a specific number we're going to kind of go through. I have a pretty clear top three, in my opinion, and then three other guys that are probably that next tier. So we'll see if that kind of lines up. Pretty specifically to my dynasty rankings, I have Luka and then SGA. I believe they're both two and three. Halliburton's up there in the top five. And then kind of that next wave of point guards to me is LaMelo Ball, Trae Young, and Cade Cunningham. Hudson, how are you kind of feeling about that list? Is there any disagreements that you have with the order?
No, not at all. I think last year was interesting as SGA sort of really ascended to that next tier. I think that it's like the stocks for him, just the efficiency is just crazy. Love that you mentioned Cade. It's a guy that I still value really highly. But I think where I differ from some people, and I guess there's a lot of people playing for money, but I'm about picking your favorite guys. When they're in this sort of myriad, it's all, you're going to get lucky with injury or not. I mean, we're lucky in Dynasty that people bounce back a year later if they're out. For example, I didn't have Tyrese at the back end of last year, but he'll be there for me kickoff of this season. So, if you're making picks in startups at this point in time, or this point in the draft, pick your favorite players, pick the guys you're going to log in and watch because that's half the fun, I think.
Yeah, I agree entirely. And that was going to be kind of, I think I have Luka at two, SGA at three in my dynasty rankings, but I think it's about just who you prefer, how you want to build your team. I think that's definitely just a massive factor with how you build out your team and who you want, especially in if you're like a true dynasty sicko and doing a 30 team dynasty. If I'm not mistaken, you're in this 30 team mock. Yeah. Okay. When did you start off pick 12? So you started off with Scotty Barnes.
Yeah. Super weird spot there. I wasn't loving that. But last year I think it was about the sort of start of the season. Scotty was just, I think he was hitting a lot of threes. Remember he hit that game win. I remember watching that live and thinking, oh, is this like the next level for him? So yeah, I took a punt on him in that mock, but it's just a mock. So I just grabbed a few guys that I think are sleepers and a few other interesting names. See if anyone in there looks at my picks going, oh, that's interesting. That's what I'm trying to get a bit of a reaction out of people. Is there anyone that I've picked there that you think is interesting from the guard position?
No, I wouldn't say, I guess I wouldn't say interesting in why did he do that? But I thought your Scoot Henderson pick was incredible value because I would have taken him probably 10 picks earlier because you got him at 39, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, weird to get him so late. I don't know why.
49.
That's what it was. Isn't that crazy? Yeah, I'm a big Scoot guy. I got him in my home league too. So, love it. And that made up for me feeling a bit like getting Scotty there. I was like, whatever. But that was like, okay, here we go. Now we got something. So, yeah, if only it was a real league.
Yeah, right. I started off that draft getting Luka at three. That's kind of why I brought up this mock. But if we run into anybody else that we drafted that we want to talk about, because I think we actually definitely will, at least for the guys that I got, for one of them later on. But
yeah,
we'll start off still talking about the stars. I got Luka at three in that one. SGA went two. Tyrese Halliburton went five. LaMelo went 10. And then I believe Cade went 15. Trae Young went all the way back at 19. There's a couple other guards that went kind of early. Is there any other point guards that you think kind of belong in the conversation with those six guys I kind of mentioned?
Look, probably not just there, but I think I've really come big on Tyrese Maxey. I just think for me, the development of the shooting, it's just absurd. So for me, he graded out as like my model gave him a B. And so it looks at a range of different metrics, as you know, from sort of the models that people have built out there. But what was interesting, 34% in college from three, but the 83% free throw was just a massive indicator, like not a great grade in my model, that B there. And I evaluate him and thought, oh, like I like bits and pieces, but just the size and the speed end to end was interesting. But overall, I wasn't too sort of, enamored by him. But then just the development of like that shooting has just been insane to me. And then one thing that was really noteworthy as well, when I looked back on his sort of like grade out in my model here, was I have like this playmaking efficiency metric that I've developed using a bunch of different advanced stats. And that was quite a positive indicator for me as well. And I think he's delivered that. If I'm not mistaken, he had multiple games last year with plus nine, plus 10 assists. And I think that's big fantasy stuff. So he doesn't have the sort of the stocks that like you see Shea get, and he doesn't have all that like at the rim efficiency that like Luka can get. But Tyrese is a guy I wouldn't be upset having, because despite there's going to be some usage challenges potentially this year, something I'm thinking could exist with the Paul George inclusion and whatnot. But I just think he's really fun to watch. He's like super lovable. Like if you got him as your first pick or second pick, given the startup nature of the draft, you could do worse in my opinion. Maybe first is a bit rich, but depending on how deep it is, like say in that 30 team, like if you got him late as your first, look, you could do worse.
Yeah. You mentioned the playmaking. He has improved as a playmaker throughout his NBA career, as far as just the assist numbers, but the turnovers haven't gone up, which I think is a big thing for him and his nine cap value. He only averaged 1.7 turnovers per game this season as a lead ball handler. That's pretty impressive. I'm so weird with my opinion on Tyrese Maxey, because I can tell he's a really good NBA player. I really like him in fantasy. He's good. I almost put him on my overrated list just because I feel like the Tyrese Maxey hype is so high.
Yeah, true. I like that. That's fair enough. I can't sort of.
But then, at the same time, I might want to put him on my underrated list because, this dude is really, really good. So he's such an interesting guy to evaluate. I have no issues including him in that conversation. I think the Paul George acquisition could impact him a little bit, but I think it's different from like when they got James Harden. Like he was playing really well. They got James Harden. Okay, now he's in a shooting guard role.
And yeah.
I don't think Paul George is going to take the ball out of his hands too much, because I think Paul George is, despite what Stephen A. Smith said, Paul George is happy to be in a catch and shoot role. I don't know if you saw that clip. It was a month or two ago where Stephen A. Smith said that, I don't see him as a catch and shoot player. And everybody's like, what are you talking about? But I don't think that'll be an issue for Paul George to be in an off ball role, play really good defense, still obviously operate with the ball in his hands, but more so allow Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid to do their thing. So I'm not too concerned about that, but he's an interesting guy to me. I don't know.
No, I think you're right on the Paul George thing. I mean, it just shows how little of the free agency research I've done. But my first instinct was, oh, that's another big head to the Dragon there. So, but overall, you're right. It probably won't impact him that much. And if anything, there's a potential boon in the assists. To your point, I think Tyrese, he gets boosted with those big games. Didn't he have like a mega game late in the season? Didn't he? Remember he had like a 40 plus 45, 50 point game, something massive.
Probably.
I think that's the hype train I think you're sort of alluding to. And without sort of significant stocks and even rebounds, and I don't know how his free throw rate has done recently. I haven't gone that deep into it, but I know the percentage is fine, but you're right. That's going to hold him back from that top tier. Whereas a guy like Cade, he's sort of giving you across the board stats, which we love, isn't he? Like you, those games where Cade pulls down a bunch of rebounds, gets a steal and a block. Like, it's like, oh, that's just that. That's that addictive element of Dynasty, and like watching your guy develop is when they start doing the things that you projected them out to do. So that's why I love that you mentioned Cade, because I'm still super high on Cade. I think when they find, when they eventually figure that sort of roster out, which is a conversation for another time, I think he's going to really blossom. And until then, I'm really happy with the production he gives me. Even then, you know, battling through having absolutely zero space. And the big thing I thought about with Cade, and I don't know if you want me to keep going on Cade here, but just because you mentioned him, like if you watch him as much as I watch him, because Detroit's one of my teams that I just follow religiously. I don't know. I'm a sadistic person. I enjoy how bad they are, I guess. But if you watch, you realize how close, like he's inches away from converting ball, like shots that just hit the front of the rim and fall short because he's fatigued or just still in his, like working on that mid range, getting to that like higher level, how many shots he creates that are wide open for teammates that can't shoot, that miss, you know, those things when that roster improves in the next couple of years, fingers crossed, I feel like that's going to also help him take that next leap. And lastly, that frame, like 6'7", 7 foot wingspan, like as more muscle gets onto his body. It's something I don't think people talk about that often, but it's really important. You know, I played a lot of basketball in my time here in Australia as a not a tall guard, but over here I was considered relatively tall for a point guard. And so I know the feeling of when I bulked up and how much that let me, you know, move people off their spots in defensive positions on me in the key, and then how much freedom it gave me developing not only my inside game and finishing at the basket, but also my creation ability being that much stronger. So I'm really big when I'm looking at prospects in Dynasty and what's their frame like, what's the shoulder like, size looks like, how much are they gaining muscle? You know, that's really important to me. Like, and just on that, someone like Kobe Bufkin, I look at the frame, and as much as I love some things he does, I go, and I think you're a Hawks fan, is that right?
Mm-hmm, I am, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd love your opinion on this, but I just look at his frame and I go, can he be anything significant when he's that slight? I'm curious. I don't know the answer. I haven't done that much Kobe Bufkin deep dive since I sort of evaluated him early days, but he's someone who I like some shades of what he's throwing down, but then I look at the frame and I go, man, I don't know if that can hang in the current environment of the NBA, especially with the defensive rules changing a little bit, as you remember last season, how it kind of loosened up a bit. Mm-hmm. What's your thoughts on Kobe or Cade? Take it from here if you like.
We'll save Kobe Bufkin for my sleepers section.
Let's go. Okay, awesome.
But we will talk about Cade now, because I did want to ask, I mean, and you already told me about Cade. And I love Cade. Before he was drafted, I was like, yeah, that's like such a complete prospect. Like just watching, a little bit of everything. He can do it. 6'7" point guard. Like, I mean, this is a guy that you would want to build your franchise around. We just saw he's a different player from Luka, but a 6'7" point guard that can do a lot on offense. I'm like, okay, like Cade can do all these things. Maybe not to the extent that Luka does, but just so well-rounded. I was like, you want to build your franchise around this kind of guy. I have a friend that's a fan of Detroit/Michigan sports. When they won that lottery, I was like, congrats. Like Cade Cunningham is like that guy. Like now it hasn't happened yet to where he's able to turn the franchise around, but I'm not going to put that on his shoulders, because he's been, I think, able to show like you said, like he's right there. He's on the cusp of being a star. If you watch him, it's like, okay, like that's an all-star level player. When they're not winning 20 games a season, then I think everybody else will kind of recognize that too. But I want to make sure that my second tier of stars at point guard, being LaMelo, Trae Young, and Cade Cunningham, I'm not biased on any of those, because I love all three of those guys. You mentioned I'm a Hawks fan. That's a good bit of my love for Trae Young just comes from that. But am I too high on any of those three? I'm assuming I'm not too high on Cade, at least, but the other two.
Nah. LaMelo is really interesting. I know you would know just as well as I do that you just can't deny the stat set that he puts up. When I was an owner at one point. I actually traded him last off season, which was raised some eyebrows, but it got me Wemby in a roundabout way. So it was worth it. Really worth it. I sold a lot of stock, but it was worth it. Yeah. Anyway, with LaMelo, the one thing that worries me, we've seen Lonzo with the knee, the degenerative issues there, like he's on a fight his way back. With LaMelo, I don't want to give him the like injury prone tag. And I've seen guys like Steph Curry have early ankle issues, but the problem with ankles are they're one of the most recurring injuries. And I don't know if you've ever dealt one with Noah, but I've been an ankle guy myself on the court. And even on the football field, we play football on grass here. And if there's uneven surfaces with divots, your foot can just go in and it's busted. So I know it doesn't matter how much work you put in sometimes, those ankles there, once they have enough damage, they are always like loosey-goosey. So for me, I am lower on LaMelo, not from a stats perspective, not from a development perspective. I think he's one of the prospects where I realized I was probably a more of a heart guy than a brain guy, because I heard an interview with LaMelo early days when I was evaluating him, because he played over here in the NBL, as you know. Mm-hmm. So he was a pretty like hot topic here. And I drafted him in my home league and all that sort of stuff, really just loved him. He said someone questioned his shooting form, and I never forget it, because when it comes to evaluating shooting form, that is an art. You know, like a lot of people think they know what they're talking about with shooting form. It's just such a crazy thing. And I think he's not redesigned, but he's really reframed the way I think about shooting, because he said, and I don't know if even if this is true, but what stuck with me was LaMelo said in response, he goes, as long as I get a good wrist flick, I'm happy with the shot. So his whole mindset is, I don't care where my hips are, my feet are, my shoulders are. This was at that time. I don't know if it's changed, right? But at the time, he said, as long as I get that right wrist flick, I'm happy with the shot. And I just thought, I've just never forgotten that. So I love LaMelo as like the artist he is on the court. The way he shoots, he just literally just flicks that wrist from everywhere, and it's just cash. But as a previous owner, I was so happy to be rid of the headache. If I was an owner now and he started the season really strong, I would be looking to sell him personally. I don't want to have a guy that's that skinny in nature, has a family that doesn't have the best health track record, and he's getting those ankles turned in, man. Like, I'm trying to get rid of him high as I can and see what I can get back in return. And we mentioned Scoot earlier. It's a guy I'd happily take, man. I want that robust running back body. Like, I'm big on frame, I'm big on balance, hip strength, all that sort of stuff. Like, that's just me as an athlete myself. I love that sort of stuff. So that's the guy I'd say, hey, you're probably a bit high. But I, having said that, I don't really drop him down, because he is what he is, and he's a gun fantasy player. So there's a bit of a tough one for me to evaluate as a fan. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think I'm too browbeaten with the injury history, or what?
No, I was actually going to just add on with the injury history. Something that Matt Lawson told me on this podcast, I know I've seen him tweet about it, I'm sure he said it probably every time he's talked about LaMelo, is that heading into last season, after dealing with ankle injuries, LaMelo said he was going to wear ankle braces, wore them for like either just a couple preseason games or just a couple games, and then said like ditch them. And then ended up injuring his ankles again. And Matt just keeps saying, if he comes out next season, he wears ankle braces, I know he's going to take things seriously, and I'm very confident. But if he doesn't, then it's like almost kind of defining, like, oh, he's not going to take these ankle injuries serious. Like, they might happen again. So it's such like a little like one key factor, but that's like, is he going to wear ankle braces, is going to determine whether he's like a top five dynasty guy, or if he's like just going to keep getting hurt. But I think you could really dive into it. I don't know if this is the right way to do things, but you could dive into it and just look at like a bigger philosophical thing of how serious is he going to take the NBA? How serious is he going to take basketball? And you can like define his whole career out of it. I don't think that's what you should do, but I guess you could look at it that way. But like you said, the talent, the stat set when he's on the court, the production, like it's unreal. So
it's unreal.
Just fingers crossed that he can stay
healthy. Fingers crossed. He makes you think that, though, with his personality. He's into fashion. He's always on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing those sort of flexing things with his Lambos and stuff. So he does make you worry. And then it comes back to my first point. I don't know if you remember, but I said that, like, Steph Curry had those early ankles and he's been fine. So, but Steph is a different character. So that comes back to your philosophical point. Is LaMelo the type of guy to put in that work that we know Steph does so religiously? So, yeah, that's just my thing. I don't know. I don't want to availability is the most important dynasty asset to me, and fantasy and dynasty. I want my guys to play because I want to watch them and I want to win. So that's my mindset. And if he's going to muck around and not, you know, do the right strength and conditioning to get that body in shape, but I don't really want to deal with that personally.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to win championships, I think that's a pretty important factor when you're playing fantasy basketball is to win. So I don't blame you there. So that's very fair. We will keep things pushing. We will move off of just the top stars, and we will talk about some underrated guys. And just if anybody's watching, look at the slides. These reflect my opinions with the pictures is who I have on my list, not necessarily who Hudson has on his. I know at least one of the guys on this one he does agree about. But my two underrated guys are Darius Garland and Jaden Ivey. If you don't mind, we'll start talking about either one of them or both of them, and then I'll have you bring in your list here in a bit. But How do you feel about me considering these guys underrated? I feel like, you know, Garland had a pretty poor season and has kind of dropped down a lot of people's boards. But I still think the talent there is, he's very good. I think a lot of it is situation dependent and him just having a poor season. We'll see if a new coaching staff can fix things for him. And then Jaden Ivey, obviously very good as, or showed a lot as a rookie. And then I know that, like, we're just kind of waiting on, I guess, him to take a step. And maybe it is a little bit about opportunity here. I don't know. How do you kind of feel about these two?
Really tough. With Darius, I can't sort of deny that last season was poor and that he's shown what he can do. I think, I don't know how much you want me to go into my side of Darius or whatnot, or just respond to yours. Yeah, so I've got Darius as being a bit overrated. So he's one of my overrated guys, if we can sort of jump ahead there. And I'll just go into a little bit why. Really simple is, I think he's got heaps of name value. I think people who play fantasy love Darius, is my opinion. From maybe my league mates, you know, his name gets thrown around in trade offers and people just love him. And, you know, he's got that style. He's got that wiggle. He's got that hesitation, the pull up. He's just incredible, like his handle and the way he sort of maneuvers. But if we look at the, like, again, back to sort of, not to harp on about it, but LaMelo, like, my thing is, look at his games played, like, since he entered the league. It's 59 games, 54, 68, 69, 57. To me, at potentially the value he would be going, if you consider him overrated like I do, or what assets you could get back for someone like Darius, to me, he's a little bit overrated. And again, overrated's really hard to pass when you're looking at guards and fantasy, where, and the NBA, there's so many statistics. It's really hard to determine. But for me, so I just look at something simple, like, is he as available as other guys? Not as much as I'd like. Mind you, before last year, there was 68 and 69. That's probably fine. But, you know, to not have a season over 70 games played when you're that young and you're meant to be in the sweet spot of your durability, that makes me stay away. Now, to your point of having him as underrated, I do agree that there will be leagues that are probably more attentive, that he has dropped down boards, you know, and people are talking about him for certain reasons, like the season last year, and whether it was Donovan being there and absorbing, just, you know, I don't know if you watch much Donovan, but he really dictates what's going on. It's all Donovan all the time, it feels like. As a Mobley owner, I was watching a bit of that and I was like, this is interesting. So the production when he's on is amazing, isn't it? But it's about when he's on it's just my personal thing, and I'm probably a little bit off the mark there, but hey, that's just my take.
Yeah, no, I mean, the situation is what scares me. This summer, honestly, it was like 30 minutes after they got eliminated from the playoffs, and there was like four rumors that came out that all of their big four wanted to be traded if they didn't trade the other guys or whatever. And I guess everything's all good now, but I was like, yeah, no, maybe you guys should trade Darius Garland. Like, please. That'd be great. Like, I get it. Like, Donovan Mitchell's a better basketball player. Like, if you want to win a championship, like, I think Donovan Mitchell's better. Like, if you want to build around him, make sure the ball's in his hands, Darius Garland, like, sure, he can play off ball, but I think he's more effective with the ball in his hands. And the Spurs are interested. Like, yeah, like, let's go send Darius Garland to San Antonio. That's going to be great for his fantasy value. I don't know what they'd get back or what makes sense. But the situation does scare me a little bit, but I feel like that's also kind of attributing to him being underrated. And you could probably also spin this same point to say it's why he's overrated. But
yeah,
if he's sitting there for, you know, it has a season again, like he did this past season, it's like, okay, like, we know what he can do. He had two top 50 seasons, one alongside Donovan Mitchell, and the best season of his career was before Donovan Mitchell got there.
Yeah.
How much longer are they guaranteed to be playing together? And I think that's kind of why this would be like the buy low opportunity, because
I agree.
If it's one more season of a first round exit or a second round exit, sure, like, everybody's kind of running it back now, but is the whole team going to be back once again? I think Cleveland's kind of at a stage where that's going to come into question every single time they're not doing well, which maybe it just happens with every team in the modern NBA with social media and everything, but teams just, oh, you guys lost? Like, let's blow everything up. Like, that's what every fan wants, is like, oh, we lost. Like, we got to start over. We got to get this guy out of here. Like, we have to reset. When continuity is maybe not a bad thing for team building, but if it happens where either Darius Garland or Donovan Mitchell's gone, I think that helps both guys out. So that's kind of why I'd be looking at acquiring Garland in this stage.
That's really astute. I totally have to agree with you. I think it shows how much I've been in the rugby league world, which is, like I mentioned to you at the start, our main, like my main sport. So I've definitely sort of totally respect the way you've like broken that down and why I do think there is a Bieler there, and probably also why I think he's overrated, because I see the fact in how bad the last couple of things, last couple of seasons have been, or how limited he's been in the last couple of seasons, whereas the production when he's alone is just remarkable. So for me, though, it's the name value piece, you know, not so much a statistic thing as just like, I feel like everyone loves Garland. Maybe I'm crazy, but that's how I feel about him.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will talk about Jaden Ivey now, and then I do want to get your list.
But Jaden Ivey.
Jaden Ivey. Yeah. He's good at basketball. I think that, I don't know. I want to get your full take because I know you're a Jaden Ivey guy.
Yeah, look, I wish I had have prepped him for my underrated too. I was so close to, as you know, we spoke about it in the green room, I guess. And I just thought I'd avoid it because I just feel like he's a guy that I do believe in for whatever reason. So let me start on Jaden Ivey. One of the more interesting guys I evaluate in the sense that he just spoke to me when I was watching him in college. Over here, it's hard to follow college religiously. Like you've got to be really committed. And unfortunately, I just have too much on my plate to really buy into too much college. So I watch the film that I can watch, some games I can watch, and I'll go into a little bit about that in one of the next segments here and why I've got a prospect here that I'm obsessed with. But Jaden was the second coming of that same feeling where I watched him and thought, this guy can really play. Now, there's a lot of negatives to Jaden's game. I always think about Jaden, if he was just 6'6 instead of 6'4, it'd be just a whole other thing. And his athleticism, unfortunately, it's really strong in my mind. Like straight line athleticism, he's really incredible. He's one of my favorite straight line. The difference between him and someone, I sort of liken him to like we've got a common saying over in Australia where it's like there's a secondary tier of grocery stores. So you say like he's a Kmart, you know, version of someone.
Yeah.
But he's sort of like a poor man's De'Aaron Fox in my mind when you talk about his ceiling and what he could be. And when I evaluated them, that like he graded out in my model better than Fox. But the difference is Fox's athleticism, he has as equally as fast, as incredible as Fox's A to B speed is, he's also really good laterally. And that's why he's got that sort of swipe of the Fox sort of nickname, because he can go laterally as well as he can go up and down. Jaden doesn't quite have that lateral explosiveness that someone like Fox has, which I think holds him back, not just defensively, where he's a bit of a black hole, sadly, whereas Fox, you know, doesn't have all of the frame through the shoulders. Like, look at this photo you've put up there. Like, Ivy, he's truly an athlete, and that's something I think will translate, and it does. He's finishing at the rim when he's playing well. Again, big caveat there. When he's playing well, it feels like he has those roller coaster moments. Is something that is why I also agree that he's underrated and why I'm a happy owner, and I think he's someone that should be owned. And in college, the production, I don't know where some of that 3-point percentage has gone at times, but in college I was happy enough with the production. He popped in a number of ways, like even in his team that wasn't amazing, he had like a solid BPM, which I liked. The percentages I was okay with, you know, 36 from three I've got in my data. Thing I love the most was the free throw attempt rate. That just really popped for a guard. Like that puts him up with Fox, who also had that same number. It puts him above a guy like Jaden Springer, who really popped in that world. It puts him above Shea, who popped in that category too. So there was enough there that I liked, as well as him running the show. The creation was not amazing. So looking at his creation numbers, and I've got my baselines here. So like he was still above average though for guards in terms of like this combined metric I do. So like there was enough there that I liked him, but overall it was the full package. No, I don't know your thoughts on him. And to me, the shot looks good. It's not always the case, but to me, the shot looks fine. The feet are a little close together, but I like the upper body portion of his shot. He has his moments with that. And to me, I don't know what you reckon about this, but in that rookie season, a guy that can get triple doubles in the NBA, I don't care if it's in a loss or not, if he can get a triple double, man, that's a guy I'm happy to take a bet on if I already liked him as a prospect.
Definitely. The shooting thing, I remember seeing you tweet about it one time, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to go through and watch a bunch of Jaden Ivey 3-point attempts and just like see if I feel the same. And like just going through, just went to NBA.com, 3-point attempts, whatever, just cycled through. I was like, yeah, no, shot looks good. Like,
shot looks good.
I know that like the percentage isn't phenomenal, but shot looks good. We know he can get to the basket. It's about finishing there, getting his percentage a little bit higher. I think, because I remember, I think it was the episode that I actually had Matt Lawson up on that we were talking about the Pistons, and I was talking about his shooting percentage, which was pretty much bad from every range except at the rim. But even at the rim, like looking at that compared to like other people, it still wasn't great. So it's all there. It just needs to finally all come together. My thing with Ivy is that, okay, can he achieve that ceiling playing in Detroit, playing alongside Cade Cunningham with a new management, new coaching staff in here? Is he a candidate to potentially be traded? Like, I think that, like, okay, he's no longer the guy that management drafted. He's the guy that the old management drafted. So if things aren't fitting great and another team wants him, then yeah, sure, they might trade him. And depending on the value that they're able to get back, will show like how much this other team wants him. Is he able to slide into a more prominent role with a different team and have success in that way, as opposed to being in an off-ball role in Detroit alongside Cade Cunningham or kind of sharing the ball there? I think that is a good bit of the reason why I have him as underrated, because I think there's like this so much untapped potential that we'll see if it happens in Detroit. But I think even if he ends up somewhere else, that it's still there. So it's just on a coaching staff to kind of unlock that.
You've summarized it way more articulately than I did. I sort of rambled because I hadn't sort of thought too much about him, because I just had him on my do not discuss list, because I guess he's pretty contentious because I'm so passionate about what he could potentially be. But if he does go somewhere else, now we're talking. I mean, you look at like someone like Jalen Suggs, for example, who's on my list. If we can do a bit of a blend here, just to keep things rolling. I know we're sort of halfway there, but Suggs is an example of a guy who people got pretty low on. I maintained, I was like, this guy's a player, man. He's a baller. Like, he will figure it out. Last year, we saw the start of that. We really saw the start of him cementing himself in a defined role, and he turned what was not a good shot into a pretty good shot. But for the way I like to enjoy my fantasy and my player evaluation and the guys I place bets on, he showed me enough with the form. He had really, like, back to LaMelo, he had a really good wrist. Jaden Ivey had a really good wrist flick in the first few years, despite the shot not dropping at all. In fact, being pretty disastrous, I still liked what I saw from a mechanics perspective, not to mention the character. Ivy's a similar guy, like super hard worker, super passionate about basketball. So he could come in this season and just start raining threes. We don't know. That's the point of development. That's the fun of fantasy. That's the fun of guys being young and hardworking. He doesn't show me anything too negative on that front. But yeah, if he goes somewhere else, it's going to be really interesting. We're going to see, like, remember Fox took, like, in my mind, I could be totally off here, correct me if I'm wrong, but I felt like Fox took a while to sort of really kick into gear as a, like, legitimate fantasy guy. Wasn't there poor free throw shooting for a while there and a bunch of lack of other stuff? Like, in my mind, I can, from memory, he took definitely a couple of years from memory. But yeah, Jaden, I just still believe in, and I'll continue to believe until it's like written down in stone in a new, until he like goes somewhere else and busts, then I know for sure I can like let that one pass by. But yeah, onto my list to keep things moving for you. I do have Jalen Suggs as underrated because I think there's more to offer. I think there's genuinely a good passer, connective player there. I don't know if he'll have the role for it to materialize beyond, but I just think, like, depending on your league, and again, this is like really nuanced, but just depending on the situation you're in, I still think you can get him at a relatively good price in some environments, some leagues. And I think there's a lot more to be like to come. Like, he even improved his stocks last year. Can you believe it? Like, how much effort he was pouring out on the court, he still improved his stocks. I just thought that was crazy. And I think the efficiency will improve as the shot continues to develop, hopefully. And the team, they've got KCP there, which now even improves that floor spacing a little bit more. So Jalen Suggs is a little guy for me. He's got a really strong grade in my model, and he was the first college prospect where I watched him live. Sort of Cade was different, but I watched Jalen live hit that game winner for Gonzaga in the final four or whatever. And in Australia, it's hard to watch college basketball. I'm at work during that time. But I happened to like be having morning tea and just like quickly pulled it up. And I saw, and I was like, I already like this guy. And to watch him, and I don't know if you remember, but before he hit that game winner, the half, like, it was like a three quarter, it was over half court, but it was really like still deep heave on the run. He threw this freaking bounce pass, man. Like, the two plays before that where I went, this guy is a baller, man. Like, he blew my mind. But just to continue rolling to save some time, another guy I think is pretty underrated is Anthony Black. So, while Jalen Suggs graded out in my model at a B+, Black had some sort of things that held him back a little bit, and he was a B- grade in my model, which isn't the worst. There's other guys down there. Like just for instance, that puts him beside some names that have conveyed to be pretty good outcomes, like Desmond Bain, RJ Barrett, who's shown a little bit more. We've got like Scoot Henderson down there. So guys I still believe in that have been quite good. So it's not game over for him having that grade. That's a fine grade. Mm. The sort of median grade's a B, so he's fine. But I think that he's one of those guys where once that swing skill, that shot comes through, he could really do that Jalen Suggs type ascension there, Anthony Black, if he can turn it around. The thing that popped with him and Matt and guys like that were really early to notice it as well was his free throw attempt rate. He's up with that Shea level in college where he's shown his ability to draw fouls, and that's always an indicator of a guy that's got like good frame, good control, good body control, good balance, and wants to play through contact. You look at a guy like Alex Saar this year, he doesn't want to play through contact. That's a guy I'm freaking out about. I'm like, dude, you've got to want to smash bodies. Otherwise, you're not going to be, you know, it's like the what's his name? Who's the Portland guy? DeAndre Ayton. It's like, dude, if you don't want to smash bodies, get off the court, like go home. Like you can't be a top dog unless you love contact in this day and age, in my opinion. And Ant Black is a guy that showed a little bit about that. And anyone that can hold their own at point of attack defense, I'd like to give more of that second chance to. You know how Suggs, like, mm-hmm. people are like, where's the offense? But when you can hold your own at the point of attack at a guard position, you're gonna get a little more breathing room from coaches to develop the rest of your game. And I think that connective skill set that Anthony Black brings is just, he's just a taller Jalen Suggs. He's not, they're different, but he's just got that same sort of potential, I think, in some regards, if he can get that swing skill. Do you want me to keep rolling here, Noah, on some guys I think are underrated?
Sure, go for it.
If that's good with you, yeah. Wallace, another guy I think is underrated. Some people might have him as a sleeper. I don't think he's a sleeper. When you play for OKC, they're just like the hot team, aren't they? Like everyone just loves them, like coming into this year. And every year people just froth Presti and all that sort of stuff. So I don't think he's a sleeper, but I do think he's underrated because given the roles he's had both last year and at college, I don't think people realize what he can do with more minutes that he should get this year. Yeah, again, he had a B grade because I think that college role really limited his potential. Whereas when you look at some of the advanced stuff, like he's an absolute beast. So he had that creation efficiency metric that really popped. So i.e. when he had the ball in his hands, he made things happen effectively is what that means. Not to mention the stocks, which we all know he has. What else have I got here? Like he had such minimal stats last year that I think that's why he's underrated, because if there's an owner that's asleep at the wheel or whatever your fantasy situation might be, and you want to go sniff around a trade for Cason Wallace, they might not have that realization. They might know more minutes are coming, but they might not know how good he could be with those minutes. I know the question will be, well, where's the usage? Because the team's already like got their roles. They've got Chet's going to take that next step, I think, in terms of usage potentially. Shea's who Shea is. We mentioned him at the top. But I think Cason, there's a really interesting ascension coming for him, and I'm really keen to see what he can do with it. Any thoughts on Ant Black, Suggs, or Cason?
Definitely. I almost included Suggs and Black. I didn't. Okay. I loved Cason Wallace, but I'll go through in order. With Jalen Suggs, for example, in college, I don't know if it was the fact. So this was before I was doing any sort of content creation, really diving into scouting, things like that.
Yeah,
I guess every prospect I looked at, I was like, oh, he's going to be the next, you know, I thought he was John Wall with 3-point shooting. And it hasn't been quite as good, especially offensively, but improving the shot is great. And I think him developing into more of like a floor spacer alongside Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner, that's going to keep him there for a long time. And 100%. Seeing, you know, the defensive numbers improve, and he's obviously just a really good defender, like he fits the team. And it was, I forgot what podcast Contavious Caldwell Pope was on, but he was saying like, yeah, like both Jalen Suggs and I are going to make like all defensive team. It's going to be the best defensive backcourt in the league. Sick. And it's like, yeah, no, that would be pretty good. Like both you guys sitting there, just locking everybody up on the perimeter and then going down and spacing the floor for Paolo and Franz Wagner. Like
crazy.
That's what Orlando needs. So I'm excited about that. Anthony Black, loved him coming out of college. Obviously the defensive numbers were insane. The steal rate was otherworldly. Yep. I have certain questions about how he fits with Orlando long-term, or honestly more of the issue would be in the short term, because they have like, I think it's 9 lottery picks on the roster. Like it's a lot of talent, a lot of competition for minutes. So we'll see. But I do really like his talent. So hopefully, even if it takes a little bit longer, like I'm going to be a believer in Anthony Black for a little while. Same thing with Casey Wallace. He was, before his draft, I was like, if I'm going to have a guy in this draft, like this is my guy in this draft. I love Casey Wallace, Kentucky guard theory, of just like every Kentucky guard or everybody that plays for John Calipari just ends up being better in the NBA than they were in college. And then he got drafted by the Thunder. And I was like, man, this stinks, because I was wanting him to, like, Utah, I think, was one pick before. And I was like, yeah, he can go to Utah and pretty much start immediately. This is great. Now he's going to go to OKC and they have SGA. They have Josh Giddey. Like, this isn't ideal. But I think seeing him in what may be a little bit more of an off-ball world this season that's on ball at times, I do still see, like, I still love his upside. I need to be a little bit more convinced about the situation. But long-term, I love his talent. So I'm excited about that. Hopefully they don't, I guess them drafting Nikola Topic also kind of throws a wrench in there for me long-term, just because they're drafting this other point guard. Now, this was just, he was the most talented player in the draft that was available when they were picking. So it's just great value. I don't think it was like a, oh, we don't like Casey Wallace anymore kind of thing. It was like a, hey, like this guy is potential all-star talent, like a really good playmaker, one of the best finishers in the draft. So like, yeah, we'll take him at 12. So it was just an OKC thing. But whether it's, I guess, elsewhere or with the Thunder in like a limited role, like I do really like Casey Wallace. So I've, all three of those guys definitely feel like they're underrated.
Yeah, you nailed it with Anthony Black. He's much like Ivy. He could go somewhere else, get the keys or the secondary keys and just shred, dude. Like when there's a, when they're not required to be a spacer, they could absolutely carve it. But on Kaysen, man, I don't know. Like I feel like when he's that good of a defender, I don't see Topic stealing him at the, stealing minutes from him when I don't know about Topic's defense, man. I'm not going to go into that. But yeah. Kaysen, and he's going to space the floor, which I also don't know about Topic doing. So he's offering two really fundamental things that they believe in there, you know, that shooting, that ball handling, that defense, and then obviously that feel stuff, which Kaysen ticks all those boxes. And don't get me wrong, Topic, elite court mapper himself. Right. Like, he's far better than Kaysen in that, like, that respect. But when Kaysen's not doing anything to detract from that elite core guy, those three guys, I feel like he's going to earn that spot. So in 20 minutes and 12% usage last year, man, he only has to play like 30 minutes and we're going to see those stats come up, and he's going to give you those fantasy goals. He's like that Jalen Suggs thing where, dude, two steals and a block from your guard, let's just say, dude, that's a difference maker over a four game week, you know, from a guy that's a fringe guard that you might get for cheap. For example, I'm just spitballing. Hey, I'm happy to move on, but I had one more guy that was just a funny one if you want me to do underrated, but we can jump into overrated if you want to keep moving.
No, I do want to hear this funny one now. I do want to hear it.
Well, it's not funny, but I feel like a few content creators in our space will enjoy this one, but I think Ja Morant's actually a bit underrated.
Okay.
I think Ja Morant's getting a bit underrated. So he is, Ja Morant is the, before my favorite prospect of this year, Ja Morant was the highest graded point guard I evaluated in my model. So he has some incredible stuff behind him. Just written here, but I think given the last 2 years, there's going to be some people quite low on him. Don't get me wrong, the caveat being injuries and his play style is super explosive, super aggressive. That is a risk. And if I'm going to say all that about LaMelo, I need to stay true to my principles. And Ja Morant does have that risk inherent in the fact that he's a smaller guy. He plays way above his weight, speed, and power, which leads to ankle, knee risks and all the other stuff that comes with it. Even wrists, you see how much he gets tipped over when he's up there in the air. You would have seen it yourself. It's pretty scary. But I think given the price being right, he's a guy you could get a solid return for, like, or go and get or whatever. I shouldn't say get a return for, because that insinuates you're trading him, but you know what I mean? Like, you could probably get him for a solid price. And the stats, it's just absurd. He's giving you, you know, 25 plus points a game with all those assists trending up over 8. That's like your Trae Young territories without the threes, obviously, but then he's giving you the 55% efficiency. So just, you know, like if you were worried about one of your top guards, like LaMelo, you could go and get Ja Morant plus plus and all of a sudden get a solid return. If you were just thinking about that, I just think it's interesting. I think for owners out there, he's a guy I think's, you know, potentially underrated, just given that he's a big name. And it's interesting to talk about underrated big names. You know what I mean? Like, you've got Darius here. I think my version of that's maybe Ja Morant a little bit. Yeah, I don't know. It's just one. I'm not going to die on this hill, but I do think he's one that, I think there's just a little bit of a, you know, with all the gun stuff too, Noah, I think that plays a part. I know in my league, we had a lot of chat about that being pretty cringe. And I know that that then tanks his market value. And if I came knocking, I could get Ja Morant for a crazy price. That's just the way I would experience it.
Yeah. If there is anybody that is looking to move off of him because of the suspensions or anything like that, I would definitely, like, maybe this is me being hopeful, but I'm pretty optimistic that considering the past year that he's had, that, like, I think that most of the issues are going to be behind him. The health is actually more of the concern for me.
Yeah.
Though this past injury was just like some free thing. Like, it wasn't like, oh, he's continually twisting his ankles or anything like that. But I agree. I think he's a guy that if you look at his nine cap value, and a lot of times it's easy to just do that. Like, oh, he was 56th last year in nine games. Like, his best was 48th, but it's because he's a below average free throw shooter. Doesn't hit a ton of threes. The stocks aren't great, you know. But I mean, you're talking about a guy that can get you 25, 6, and 8. Like, dude, that's pretty valuable. And it's hard to, I guess, kind of truly evaluate him when his 9 cap value isn't up there with a guy like a Trae Young or like a LaMelo or those other point guards that are up there. But he's on that same tier. It's just about building your team correctly.
Correctly. I punt free throws and threes in my main league. So I look at Ja and go, perfect. Dude, underrated, because I punt those things. So, and everyone punts these days. It's not like it's not the sort of secret thing it used to be a few years ago. You remember when punting was a real strategic advantage? Now, like, everyone knows to punt. So in that instance, you're right. Like, yeah, he doesn't quite hit the top of the top, but yeah, in certain builds, he's a gun, man. Like, you're giving me 25 points and plus 8 assists. That's the realm I want to be in. That's cash.
Yeah. That's the beauty of dynasty fantasy basketball. It's like, I can be higher on somebody than anybody else. Oh, well, sorry. It's just my punt build. Sorry. Like, it's not because I'm right or wrong. It's just because that he fits my team better or something like that. Which I think also makes trades like interesting, is because, okay, like, this player, it's like literally, like, I guess, I don't know exactly how it is. Like, is it category or points leagues with rugby when you're doing fantasy with that? But like with fantasy football, like, it's just all points. So it's okay, like, this player's good or he's not. It's not like he fits my team better. But with category leagues in fantasy basketball, I know they do it with fantasy baseball as well. It's like, oh, like, I need help in this specific category, or I'm punting these. So this player literally fits my team better. It'd be just like an NBA team trading for a guy that fits their team and like what they need more than another team. I think it's fascinating. It's so fun to me.
Dude, you've nailed it. It's the absolute best part of it. That's why you play nine cap, because I can go, I want a guy that gets like a Dan Gafford. Give me those blocks. I don't care about the other crap. And then I can trade you a guy that gets threes, and we can just have a quick conversation. The trade's done in 2 hours and I'm stoked as walking away. Whereas you're right, with football and even rugby over here, there is that limitation. They're like, I can see his averages right in front of me. Why would I want a guy who averages 50 when my guy averages 54? I'm not doing that. So what we have to do, and I love that you mentioned this, because I'm big on like the philosophy around you know, constitutions, league settings. You know, I've got a big thread on the best sort of dynasty nine cat settings, just from consensus and just from what I've experienced, making lots of mistakes as a commissioner, going, oh, I shouldn't have done that, or that really derailed that season because we went with this rule set or whatever. I'm really big on the philosophy and the strategy behind, and with all my rugby content, I'm talking about trades. Like, I don't know if I've made a trade in the last few years in rugby, my one, which is the same as NFL for all intents and purposes, where I haven't sent two away to get one back. Because you just have to. I have to go to market willing to lose the trade on face value because I'm playing down the line. So it might be week three in NFL and I go, here, have, I don't know, some running back and George Pickens, but I want this guy back who, I love George Pickens. So I just thought I'd throw him in there.
Oh, gotcha.
he's just like a larrikin. Yeah. He's not even that good. But like, I'm always doing the two for one, and I want to build like those positive relationships with my league mates who have a good experience trading with me. So when I come back either that season again or next year, they go, oh, I won the trade last year. Yeah, Hudson's an idiot. I'll definitely trade with you, but I'm like doing what I want and getting, to me, it's a win-win because you think I'm an idiot and I'm getting the player I want. So I'm cool, man. You can have three players for one. So you nailed it. And nine cat, it's just the perfect setup for that. And trades are so abundant because value is so fluid. It's just the best.
Yeah. No, the mind games that you're looking 3 years ahead, that's pretty awesome. But we'll keep it pushing. We will probably just go pretty quickly through these overrated guys. And
yeah,
we talked about this before. I'm pretty sure we've kind of mentioned this throughout. It's like, to me, overrated isn't, oh, this guy actually stinks when everybody thinks he's good. This is, I'm a little bit lower than everybody else on this guy. or these guys. I'll just quickly go through mine. And if you have any disagreements, then feel free to share. If not, then I'll probably just have you share yours and then we'll just keep it pushing to the sleepers, yeah, which I know that's what everybody wants to hear anyway. Yeah, so
we'll get to those sleepers.
Let's do it. All right. So the first guy I have is Jalen Brunson. It's not because I don't think that Jalen Brunson's one of the few best point guards in the NBA. He proved that in the playoffs. I think that sometimes the value gets a little bit overstated because of the numbers that he put up in the postseason without Julius Randle and the end of the regular season without Julius Randle. And now they've also added in Mikal Bridges. So yes, Tom Thibodeau is still going to run his knees into the ground and play him 35 to 40 minutes per game. But I think the usage is going to be very different for Jalen Brunson. I don't think that we're going to see him be a top 30 player again like he was this past season. I think that it's probably going to drop down a couple of rounds. So it's not that I'm significantly lower on Jalen Brunson. It's just I think that he was able to benefit from his situation being a little bit in his favor because he's a really freaking good point guard. And the situation's going to be a little bit different this upcoming season. I'm just a little lower on him. Same thing with Coby White. I think he benefited this past season. He had a breakout season. Very good basketball player. Better than my evaluation or like opinion of him was in the past. Yeah. But now he's like the team is different. You know, they've acquired Josh Giddey. Lonzo Ball's saying he's going to be healthy. So if that happens, we now have three, arguably four point guards with Ayo Dosunmu, kind of sharing the ball, sharing minutes. So I'm not as optimistic that Coby White is going to have as good of a season this upcoming season as he did last year. I still think long-term a phenomenal talent, but I think Chicago needs to answer a few questions, especially if they're starting a rebuild. I don't know. It's just a little bit interesting for me. Honestly, I was struggling to come up with some overrated guys just because everybody I look at, I'm like, yeah, I like him. I like fantasy basketball. I like that guy. He's fun. So it's hard for me to like really be pessimistic, but these were the two I was able to come up with.
Dude, that's why I was so excited when you messaged me because I just love your style. It's just so optimistic. I actually love your analysis. I haven't really put much energy into that broader free agency stuff, as I sort of alluded to. That's where I've fallen down with my how hard I'm pushing on the rugby side of things this year. But Coby White, yeah, he's I think just like running through his like college like model grade and all the stuff I've done here, and he's really actually he does project out to be like a poor man's Darius Garland, and that's something you kind of if he can get moved. Given this, you're talking situationally, but if he can get shifted or whatever happens down the line, dude, he's a guy you want your hands on for sure, given that potential there. Like the creation numbers out of college, I'm really comfortable with those. And then the percentages, as we know from his shooting and just, but then what he has, he has a bit more durability. He's got that A through that, what I call straight line speed sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And he's blisteringly quick, Coby White, like underratedly fast. So that stuff's real, man. And I think, I think given the situation, these are good call outs for both these guys. So I'm comfy with it. I mentioned Darius Garland earlier. And my other one is, I think, Jamal Murray. And again, just simply, I think he's overrated just due to name value. You win a ring, you know, he's got the swagger. He has the sick, silky smooth. To me, he's the smoothest guy in the league. I think I might have done smoothness rankings on Twitter, or maybe it's in my notes and I haven't posted it yet, but I've got these full smoothness rankings. When I was like 16, I did like swag rankings to take the piss. Oh, yeah. I had like Marcus Morris wearing foam posits on number one and stuff back when I was like 16. And I was like Kelly Oubre. Like I had all this just crash in my like phone. This was like when you used to post on Facebook. Yeah, everyone loved to do it. Everyone would chime in. This was way before like Twitter was like NBA Twitter was a thing. I was a baby back then. But to me, the smoothness is really important. And Jamal Murray, he's super cool. He's got the with his play style and he's got that name value off the rings. But dude, last five seasons, 59 games played, 48, the ACL, 65, 59. I'm just not interested. Just constant soft tissue injuries, not interested. And I know he's not like the greatest player, but I think he's overrated.
Yeah.
Fantasy-wise, I mean.
I agree. I considered him for this list as well. Ended up going with these two guys. But, I mean, people say that a lot of NBA players don't care about the regular season. They just play only for the playoffs. That might be true with Jamal Murray. Like he definitely is a different playoff. Jamal Murray is very different from regular season Jamal Murray. Still a very good player, but yeah, in the playoffs, you know, he can hit a big shot as we saw this past season.
100%.
All right. We will move on to some sleepers. I do have three. I don't know if you have, or how many you have. I think you said you have three as well, but
yeah, I got three, yeah.
Perfect. So actually, we'll start with yours this time because I feel like I've been starting every time.
Yeah, no, I think your stuff's great. I think the best thing is I've only got two now because we agree on Scottie Pippen.
Perfect.
A guy I didn't even really evaluate coming in. I just didn't have that much interest in him. But, dude, I cannot deny, not in the numbers, G League stuff, but just Summer League. Like, I've seen enough. I'm happy to call him a sleeper 100%. He'll be on waivers for some people. And I think he's got to be owned given the situation, I think, is what something you're going to speak about. And, like, 26, 3.7 steals per game. Like, what the hell? I think that's the Summer League lines. Dude.
Yeah.
And then the other night, I think he had 20, like, one of the later games, he had, like, 25, 9 of 4 and 64% shooting. Like, that's authentic stuff. And that's, like, above what he was doing at Vanderbilt, where he sort of was really productive anyway. So he's shown that ascension against equivalent or maybe better defenses. So I'm comfy with him. And I think he's a better punt, I think it's interesting to say, than some of this league's 2024 second rounders in your draft. So say you're in a 12-team league and you're drafting out, you know, a couple of rounds, I think he's a better guy to grab if you could give those picks away, or, you know, just in our league, the way we do things is you draft your guys and you drop who you want to keep for next season because it pushes your roster over. It's pretty fluid because a lot of guys have some fringe. We play a massive roster. It's a whole thing. But, yeah, I think Scottie Pippen's got to be owned. So, yeah, I totally agree with you there. Another guy I've got really quickly as a sleeper is even Devin Carter. I just think, you know, people, he's going to be a hot name because of the draft, but like, I think what he could do for your team, given he gets the opportunity, I don't think people realize just how productive he could seriously be. I'm super high on him. Model grade of B+, which, as we've alluded to, has some pretty strong names beside it. For a guard to get that grade in my broader model, it covers all positions and stuff, I think's impressive. And I just, I don't think he's really a sleeper, but I don't know, he kind of is to me, given like where I'm placing him in the broader picture of Dynasty, if that makes sense. Like, he's no sleeper in his draft class, but I think in the bigger picture, he's a guy I'd love to get my hands on. And then my last one, this is really deep. I think you should go now. I'm going to finish on one that's just so absurd, and we can just enjoy it and just have a laugh at it, and we'll get out of here.
I like that. I like that. And just because you mentioned Devin Carter, I don't have him on my list, but I do think that if you're looking at the Dynasty sickos, the guys that have been like keeping up, like, they're not creating content, they're just like playing Dynasty fantasy basketball for the love of the game and to win their league, but like, they haven't stopped paying attention all summer. Like, obviously it's gonna be hard to find you guys a sleeper, like, everybody's paying attention to everything, but you know, there are people that are playing in a Dynasty league that took a few months off, you know, maybe they're playing fantasy baseball or fantasy rugby, like you said, and like, they're just trying to get back into it. So sleepers, like, you know, if you didn't pay attention to Summer League, you might not know about Scottie Pippen Jr. in the same way. So I think that's totally fair.
And you've nailed it. That's why you've nailed it. And that's why Devin Carter, they might have fourth pick and had a few months off. They might be able to get him at, you know, take him a bit earlier than what they would if they just went off the rankings of the NBA. This is what I'm thinking about. And if they're contending, for example, they came fourth last year or third, and now they've logged back in for their draft, they go, oh, who do I get that's going to help me short term? Man, a guy like Devin Carter is someone I believe in this year or next year potentially to deliver that value compared to where he's been taken by the people that have logged out, so to speak, or touched grass, Noah, but you've nailed it. So yeah, carry on about Scotty or even Kobe here.
Yeah. And I think just real quick, I'm like more on the, like, the bigger aspect of, I guess, the philosophy we're just discussing, but sometimes with my analysis, I'm like, I'm trying to find this like random sleeper on this team that nobody's ever going to try and pick up that's going to win you your league, because, you know, when we're playing these leagues that roster 400 players, it's impossible to find, but I'd like try and look for it. And it's like, sometimes we just need to, you know, everybody in our leagues might know about this guy, but maybe not everybody in, you know, a more casual dynasty league knows about this guy. So let's mention it. So we have to provide analysis for everybody. So I have Scottie Pippen Jr., just like you said, very like an elite summer. And I think, you know, with Ja Morant, we discussed him being a high flyer that could deal with ankle injuries. Like, I think Scottie Pippen Jr. has a good chance of being the backup point guard next season.
100%.
The steal numbers were elite. The passing was pretty solid this summer, as well as this like past season when he was stepping into a larger role. He's on a two-way deal, but it was like so clear. The only issue with that was Memphis was like, yeah, he's going to play tonight. And the next night, oh, it's tip off. Yeah, he's not playing tonight. And that was such a frustrating thing, but that was Memphis's entire season last year. Kobe Bufkin, again, just need to make sure I'm not being biased as a Hawks fan, but I really do like Kobe Bufkin as a player. Just pulling up some advanced stats. So he had a 1.7 steal percentage last year and 2.3 block percentage. I played 17 games, less than 200 minutes, but That's pretty good. The players that reached those numbers this past season: SGA, Giannis, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, Isaiah Hartenstein, and Dan Gafford. That's it. So now
it's interesting
when I'm pulling that up on Stathead, Kobe Bufkin's not even coming up. So maybe there are some other guys that didn't play many minutes, like Kobe Bufkin, that also qualified for that list. But the defense, I think, like the defensive production, it's very good. When he was on the floor, he was, you know, the on-ball defender. He's the point of attack guy. Probably, you know, partially because Trae Young's not the best at that. But so I've heard. But yeah. Very good defender. Playmaking upside, I think. Shooting upside. Like, I think he's going to be a guy that is very good on both ends of the floor as he continues to develop. One of the things about Kobe Bufkin is I liked him coming into the draft. Was pretty happy the Hawks took him. Was talking about, because he came out as a sophomore and he wasn't very good as a freshman, had a big sophomore year. And I don't remember what specific coach said it, but it was like, he's the hardest working player that he's ever seen at Michigan. Michigan's produced a handful of at least very solid NBA players. Obviously Franz Wagner is probably best guy off the top of my head, but a lot of NBA players. So that quote to me, it's like, oh, like, okay, even if he's not great as a rookie, like he's a long-term guy. The Hawks have recently used their G League team well. Like, not every team does that, but they had Jalen Johnson basically play his whole rookie year there, and look at Jalen Johnson now. Kobe Bufkin basically spent his whole rookie year there. We'll give him a couple of years of development, but I'm excited to see what he can do long-term. And then the last guy I have is a rookie, Isaiah Collier on the Jazz. Had a very strong summer. I'll pull up the numbers as I'm saying this, but a guy that was a five-star recruit and then didn't have a great season at USC and then slipped to the Jazz at the end of the first round. I'm like, that was one, such a slide that probably shouldn't have happened. Even if he didn't have a great like college freshman season, he's too talented for him to have slid that far. Played 7 summer league games, averaged 11.6 points, 3.4 rebounds, 4 assists, 2.1 steals. So I don't know. I think Utah has a lot of talent on the team, a lot of picks, and a lot of potential for roster turnover, roster changes. Keontae George seems like he's going to be the point guard, but he's a very good scorer. I wouldn't call him an elite playmaker. So maybe if, you know, the Keontae George point guard experiment, they continue to try and roll with it. It's like, hey, we really like him as a scorer. Maybe he's the shooting guard and Isaiah Collier ends up even being a starting point guard long-term. I think he'll have the potential to see minutes, maybe not a ton early on, but Utah tends to do this thing at the trade deadline where they pull the plug on their entire season and let's hand Collier the reins and see what he can do. So I'm excited about this situation, even like for a guy that slid as far as he did in the draft. I think, like you said, a lot of times if you're not paying attention all summer, you're not trying to gather information on the draft and who different people like, who's actually going to be good in fantasy. You just say, oh, he went 29th. I don't want to take him early. Why would I want him? He was like, the NBA teams didn't want him. And if that happens in your draft, then it's like, great, I'm going to get Isaiah Collier at great value. And he has a chance to be a star. Like, he's a, like, was a very good player in high school and was okay in college. And honestly, I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, like USC isn't exactly producing a ton of NBA guards. So it's not like, oh, he struggled at Kentucky. Like, he struggled at USC. So I'm not ready to fully write him off just because of a bad season.
Yeah. No, I really like what you said about Kobe Bufkin. I've totally never really factored much of the defense into my evaluation of him, but like the stock percent in college, it was notable. Mm-hmm. It was fine. I loved the creation sort of combined metrics there, the efficiency being above average. That's great. But yeah, the shooting was really interesting. Like the free throw percent, 85%. That's like top stuff at that age. And I just love the length, 6'5", 6'7", wingspan. Yeah. Like that's important stuff to make up for sort of the slight of frame. He's like quite a thin dude, but you know, with that wingspan and that tenacity, I didn't know that about his work rate. So that's something that changes my whole outlook on Bufkin. And I liked him, don't get me wrong. So like, I already liked him, but awesome. I sort of, you being a Hawks fan, you've got that next level of knowledge about him, which I really enjoy. So now I'm looking at him going, is he on my waivers in any of my leagues? You know, he won't be, but that's something I'm like, I love that explanation. But Collier, what you say, it's so funny. I nearly had him too, Noah, because he is my like Cam Whitmore. I love Cam Whitmore. Mm. Cam Whitmore to me is a stud, and there's a lot of noise about Cam Whitmore. But if you listen to people that are a lot smarter than me talk about Cam Whitmore, not only was he making last year passing reads that we never saw in college, the assists in summer league were all like generally 4+ from what I last checked. Anyway, I heard someone mention that on a podcast. So he is doing all the things people thought he could never do. He's showing the connective ability. I'm obsessed with the athleticism and the frame. That dude is a fucking beast, man. He is special when it comes to like just driving that power. The shot is there. We've seen the defense. Remember some of those games last year? He had 8 steals or something. Remember? I don't know if you remember this. I'm sort of pulling random crap out of my memory. Sorry, Noah. But he had it might have been in G League or Summer League, or like he had a game where he had like 6 steals or 8 steals. And I'm like, dude, this guy could be really special. And I think Collier presents a similar potentially narrative of falling, but having elite skills, being his driving, his free throw attempt rate of, I think, maybe one of the best in my model here from a guard. I have an outlier for Judah Mintz, but yeah, Isaiah Collier, just a special, special free throw attempt rate from what I've got number here. Hopefully it's not a miss key when I was inputting his data like at the start of the year and whatnot, but yeah, that's really notable. I don't love the shooting efficiency, even though his true shooting was like okay, it wasn't great. But the creation was sort of better than I think people give him credit for, and it's back to that Cam Whitmore thing. These explosive athletes, if they can pass a little bit, we haven't even touched on it. And the reason I wanted to talk about point guards with you is because obviously it's a position I played like my whole life. So like I tend to prefer sort of like cluing into them. They're really fun to own and watch and analyze for me because of how complex it is. And I feel like in Dynasty, it's really valuable to let people know it's okay to wait 2 to 3 years. It's the hardest position to play, dude. It's like a quarterback. You know, it's rare you get CJ Strouds, you know what I mean, that just light it up. It's like, that's for all you American guys. I'm paying attention. But, you know, like I'm just saying it's like it's okay to wait a couple of years, man. Not everyone's like sort of – I know Trae Young had the bad start to his season, then lit it up when, you know, he came back from the – whatever, it was All-Star break or something, and he came back in that second half and just dominated. So it's not everyone's like that, man. It's a really hard position to play, and those guys that aren't – 6'6", 6'7", that have that vision over the top that help them sort of make simple reads a bit more effectively, or their passing angles open up with that wingspan or that height. The shorter guys like Scoot and potentially Collier, when they've got that explosive frame, like that, that strong frame, that explosive athleticism, once they get that under control and know how to like work the defender and those angles, that's when things really open up. So you're totally right on Collier being this guy that I don't know too much about what his minutes will be, but I do think there's enough talent there that if he's disregarded in your league, it's just like Whitmore last year. Don't pay attention to where he got drafted. Do your own analysis, and if you have to reach for him a little bit, go for it. There's enough upside there to take that risk, you know. Like, yeah, I wish we were talking about forward so I could go on my Cam Whitmore thing, because that boy he's my Jalen Johnson of like the next bit, you know. I remember looking like an idiot when I first drafted Jalen Johnson. Everyone's like, who's that? I remember literally messages came in after the draft for me and my mates, who the hell did Hud take there? What, Jalen Johnson? And I was like, man, this boy is different. He's like a 6'10 point guard or whatever it was, you know, 6'8 or 6'9. But I was like, this guy's sick. And I think Whitmore is my next sort of Johnson. I'm happy to wait for him to pop. And I could be totally wrong. Could always be wrong. But I've seen what I've seen, and I really believe in him. And I know that people way smarter than me get paid to do this evaluation also believe in him. So I'm feeling confident on my takes.
Yeah. With Whitmore, I feel like the Reed Shepherd hype plus Cam Whitmore having the awful shooting performance in his last summer league game, I totally missed the assists. So I'm glad you brought that up. He played 3 games, 4 assists, 4 assists, 5 assists.
Dude,
that's such a huge step for him.
And if this comes back to sort of the Cade Ivy thing, like I watch a lot of my favorite players that I know are riskier bets. And Cam Whitmore, he's making the right connective reads. He's moving the ball, but also that wasn't his role. He was told to go out and play, like go out and shoot, go out and score, because you're not playing forever sort of thing. Like, but I've seen that willingness to pass, the willingness to try and do the right thing. And that's all he needs when he's got everything else in his toolkit. If he can develop it and continue on that trajectory, could be a special player and just a super fun athlete. And the interview stuff I thought was weird. Like, people are introverts, man. Not everyone's like fully like a salesman on their talents. Some guys are chill.
that's a good point. I guess we'll get back to point guards, because I think you said you do have one that's going to be very exciting.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. Okay. It's not exciting at all. I just went really deep because, as you said, some people are probably listening to this, and if they're listening to this, they probably know more than I even know. But a guy that I think that I've been holding in a couple of leagues, deep ones, is Jaden Springer. Had an incredible grade in my model. For me, he pops on the eye test with just his frame and his physical play. So I spoke about that earlier, just guys that are really willing to play into contact and move through contact. Love his body control. Like, he gets hit, he still maintains that. Awesome point of attack defense with his body and his, like, the way he moves left to right. Love that, like, strength in the lower body. Yeah, the model grade positioned him to similar guys like Topic, Carter, LaMelo, for example. So, you know, if you want a deep sleeper with tons of risk, I think Springer is one. Super young at the draft, which we love. Not the worst shooting numbers in college, but he was relatively productive. That free throw attempt rate put him near SGA, which I always love as a positive indicator for a guy. Negatively, though, the shot is pretty questionable. He doesn't even really shoot threes, which we just hate to see in this day and age. And the quality, the ability to create quality looks for others is questionable. But, you know, and I know per 36 is a bit of a dream world, but he does average 3.8 stocks per 36, which is pretty like, it's mentioned. Right. It's like noteworthy, I think, in a way. I'm just really worried by the shooting. The free throw percent is like a nice indicator, like, especially being more of an aggressive driver, like lead ball handler in the sense of how he wants to get downhill. Move to Boston probably harms him in terms of opportunity. But I also think if you want to be a bit more philosophical, which we've not done too much of tonight, which I think is good, but if you do want to be, I think it also could benefit in terms of development amongst, like, you know, mature players in tough scrimmages under tough coaching that have now won a championship and he knows what to expect. So look, he's not a guy that I think is going to, you know, dominate the world or anything, but just in a really deep league, like, I've got my hands on him because I've seen some stuff and gone, until there's a better option on the waivers or whatever, I'm happy to hold him just to see if that ever transfers. But that's just for my real deep league guys or salary leagues or whatever, where he could potentially deliver value. I don't know. He's just a guy I personally think's okay and could maybe one day translate.
Yeah, no, I like that one. I did consider him. I didn't include him on my list, but I did think about it. And I also saw that you got him in the 30 team mock that we're doing. You got him round 10. So that's, if you're in your league and you want Jaden Springer, you don't have to take him very early. This is a mock with a bunch of analysts. So
absolute punt, mate. It is very risky, but I just thought I'd do something just for someone out there or just for the conversation's sake. Like, you know, I could have said something boring, but I was like, why not go someone that I grapple with myself, but I've seen some stuff that's really interesting. And, you know, my model, like, I have a confidence score I've got up here just to give listeners an indicator. Like, my confidence score on my model is -1.64, which means it's pretty good. It's generally, and that's based off what I grade someone at and then what their peak fantasy score has been. And that model is dealing with players that I've only evaluated in the last 2 years that haven't even come to fruition. So when the confidence score is that close to being accurate, Noah, meaning when those grades convey to, like, tiers of you know, top 100, top 50 is sort of the oscillation, if you want to, or the parallel, if that makes sense. So if someone has an A+, then my model's saying they should be a top 15 fantasy finisher. So when my confidence score from all my metrics is giving me from those grades is a -1.64 with only 2019 and onwards modeled out, these guys haven't even conveyed to their potential, and it's already that much confidence. I'm pretty comfortable to say, like, yeah, he may not convey, but he's a solid bet because of that grade. And this is where it gets really tough, is what was his role in college, that sort of stuff. Like, I'm not going to go into it, but in a really deep league, or if someone just wants to take a fun flyer and see what he's about, or just watch him on YouTube and go, what's this guy even talking about? Who is Jaden Springer? Now's your time to have a look at him.
Yeah, no, and I think just looking at it, you mentioned the championship experience, now just sitting on Boston's bench, like, you're watching Derek White and Jrue Holiday play and you're practicing against Derek White and Jrue Holiday. Say he gets traded at some point, like, you're taking this championship pedigree and having practice alongside Derek White and Jrue Holiday, and now you're going to go be some other team's on-ball defender. Like, yeah, I think that's a little bit of value you can probably take, a little bit of knowledge you could probably take from those guys that would benefit another team. So there isn't, like, really a better situation for a guard that is good defensively to kind of learn. So I do like that part of things. Hopefully that'll just work out well. Just real quick before we wrap up, I did want to reference this 30 team mock that we're doing one more time.
Yeah,
just because I mentioned you got Jaden Springer round 10.
Let me open it too so I can play along with
you. You got Scoot Henderson. This was round 2, pick 19. So that's pick 49. Then you got Jalen Suggs, round 3, pick 19 after the third round reversal, which is pick 79. Rob Dillingham, next round. We didn't mention him at all, but
obviously Rob,
a talented point guard. Yeah. And then I think I got, for point guards, I mentioned Luka, I got Jaden Ivey round 4, which was pretty impressive that he was still there to me. I was pretty surprised about that. But pick 93, I think that's the only other point guard that I've taken. I know I got sniped on Kobe Bufkin in round 8, freaking B-dub. He said he was waiting 59 picks or whatever to get Bryce Sensabaugh, and then I took him one pick before him. And then right there on the flip, he took Kobe Bufkin right before I got him. So I was like, all right, he got me back, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, was there any other, I guess real quick before we wrap up, if you don't have anything, that's totally fine. I know I'm just putting you on the spot, but any other point guard picks that we haven't discussed, or like where they went from guys that we did discuss that you might want to, that you thought was interesting?
No, the main thing is I got Rob Dillingham, and I'm super high on him. Like, yeah, call me crazy. Like, obviously I didn't even really mention Reed because I just don't think he needs to be mentioned. He's just one of my favorite prospects I've ever scouted. Yeah. I know you've spoken about him ad nauseum on this podcast and stuff. He is what he is, but a guy I've got pretty, like, I think right now, just from memory, really recently, like as recent as last week, I've got Dillingham second on my 2024 post-draft like rookie evaluation board. So just love Rob. I think a guy that has that much shake, that much wiggle, that much creation. The passing's awesome. Like, the grade's great. Where is he on here? He sits beside guys like Markel Fultz, who, as you know, had a crazy college time. He had Brandon Podziemski, even like Miles McBride, who I loved out of college, who's finally conveying a little bit, a guy I kind of wanted to mention, but I waited up. But yeah, love Rob Dillingham. So what are your thoughts on Rob, how he compares to someone like Topic in your mind, if you've evaluated those guys coming in?
Let me pull
up.
Is
that too tough?
No, sorry, that's not on the spot. I haven't updated this, but this was my initial post-draft pre-summer league rankings. I had Topic 4th, Rob Dillingham 6th.
Oh yeah, that's not too bad. I was like
you're all good. I do really like Rob long term. This year I'm like, okay, he's probably gonna be 15 to 20 minutes per game guy, comes off the bench, has some fun on offense, learns from Mike Conley. Okay, great. I would assume that Minnesota traded up to get him because they think, hey, like, this could be our backcourt of the future. And whether or not that works out, we'll see. But if Minnesota's willing to, I mean, it was a 2031 first, which is like a sixth grader or something that they traded to get, like, you know, we'll figure that out when the time comes. But if they have the chance to give Anthony Edwards his point guard of the future, right as Mike Conley's, you know, on the end of his career, it could work out great and end up, like, he could really pan out. I think he does have the scoring ability, the three-point shooting, the like passing upside to be a very, very fun fantasy player and just a fun NBA player in general. You mentioned, like, the handle's crazy. So it's going to be a lot of fun, him and Anthony Edwards as a backcourt for like 5 to 10 years. And yeah, no, I think that's fun.
Yep. No, I agree. I think obviously the frame, super tiny and defensive issues, but I think the way they want to position Ant is to have a guy like Rob next to him. Hopefully that if they continue with that sort of defensive approach there in Minnesota with some of the guys they've got developing as bigs, I think they can get away with having a guard the size of Rob. And I'm really high on him. I just think that shooting and scoring is the name of the game. I've had to learn that. I think something I've done wrong is I love the Jalen Suggs, I love the defensive guys, but I've had to realize that, man, if you can put that ball in the hoop a lot, that's pretty important. And I think he's got way more creation for others than Cam Thomas, for example. Like, I loved Cam coming out. I drafted him and stuff because I was like, this dude's a freak. But we've seen that it doesn't really materialize when you're just that one-dimensional. I don't think Rob's one-dimensional at all. I think he's pretty fascinating as a player. So that's just one guy I mentioned because I got him in the mock. I got Scoot, Suggs, Rob. Springer as a guard. So, yeah, I thought I got some guys I really like. So I was pretty happy given where I was picking and how good the people in this mock are at sort of identifying guys I like. It's pretty frustrating. Hey, Noah, you're like, oh, good. And then you know it's going to get sniped because everyone's all included. Yeah. So,
yeah, for sure. And obviously, we could probably talk for another hour on things, but we'll wrap things here. Totally. We'll definitely have you back so that we can dive into something else and go really in depth, because that was a lot of fun. I know you say you've been doing a lot of rugby stuff. Do you have any NBA content that we should be looking out for, anything over the next few months that everybody should, I guess, be looking out for?
Yeah, look, I just changed my Twitter handle to Upside NBA because of how hard I've been pushing the rugby stuff to be Upside NRL. It's actually like Upside SC because the Super Coach is the platform. It's a whole thing. But yeah, I will be doing my post-draft board in the coming days, I suspect. I'm just trying to not really rush it. There's so many good creators now. I remember like when it was just basically Matt at one point. So I was like more than happy to pump stuff out pretty regularly. But now everyone's so amazing. I don't need to sort of just add more black noise to the whole thing, but I will be releasing that. And then I have a site there that you can see like more of my thoughts. I've got like some threads on best settings if you want to do that before your dynasty kicks off. I have a constitution template up there as well for people, so more for people looking to get started or just review how they're running their dynasty leagues. I'm pretty big on trying to get it right. I think there was not a stat necessarily, but there was a sentiment that most dynasty leagues burnt out or fizzled out after 2 years. So I'm really big on how can we keep our leagues together? How can we incentivize returning players, people who don't start that well? How do we make them stick around? How do we give them hope that there's a reason to keep persisting so we don't have to keep replacing managers every year? It is not a perfect science and it's not that easy, but it's something I'm pretty keen to try and improve generally, because I think when I get messages, and this happens across both sports that I create content for, a lot of the settings are the first sort of pillar that falls down when things collapse. They go, oh, I'm not playing this year because last year there was a trade before finals where the best guy got this thing out of this guy. And it's like, well, that should never have happened, because you should have a constitution that says that by round X, there's no more trading, or if you're out of contention, you're frozen out. Like these little things that don't seem like worth putting energy into, but having a quick one page, or in our instance, I think we've got 5-page constitution, it really helps people know, set things up for success. And there's no point playing dynasty and then then fizzling out in 2 years. We're playing to hold these guys for as long as we can to see them materialize into what we think they could be.
Yeah, no, it's awesome stuff. I know I've definitely looked through it. You have the thread. I know, I think you had mentioned it earlier. I don't think that was before we start recording, about like the best settings for dynasty leagues.
Yeah. It's just a Twitter thread I've screenshot onto my little crappy website. I've just got like a really quick free website just to help people like find stuff. So definitely my dynasty overall rankings are out of date with all free agency. Don't stress too much on those, but I have I like to put a bit of commentary just to add a bit of flair. Cause I think it's one thing to have black and white A through Z, but it's nice to share why or what you think, have a bit of fun with it. People are so good at analyzing fantasy sports these days, such as yourself, Noah. So I try to just bring a bit of color or flair, because I've got my fingers in a bunch of different pies, so I can't be all that you guys are, but I like to say, hey, there's this guy's doing this. I don't know if you guys noticed, but I noticed this, so maybe that helps someone out, Noah. So I try to bring like a little bit of a different style to it, I think. But I do have like the model and stuff, which does support my evaluation for sure. And I've mentioned the confidence index there, and that'll only get better as these guys materialize. And so I think I'm starting to improve the way I evaluate things as time goes on, like we all do. But yeah, it's basically it. So yeah, just check out the Twitter and check out Noah if you're new here. He's just got an awesome style. So yeah, really appreciate you having me on, man.
Dude, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining me. Everybody that's listening, definitely give Hudson a follow at Upside NBA. And if you're interested in rugby content as well, he's there for that. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Tankmulator podcast, and I will see you next time.
You just listened to another episode from the Fantasy Basketball International Podcast Network. Thanks for joining us. And for more information about joining our community, please check out our website at fbibasketball.com.